Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Bohemian Rhapsody, a review. Today, on the 23rd of November, I saw the Queen movie. I would say, it's not a documentary, it's a, well, I think it is proposed to be a realistic recount, and it's, I suppose it's a film, it's not a documentary with the narrator and this attempt to interpretation. There's no feeling that you are sitting with someone who's interpreting, showing you through, but there's sufficient new things to go through it. So it's a 2-hour documentary in this 160-seat cinema, and being my birthday, my wife took me to it with a friend, whereas she would normally go with her friend, leave me out. So that was rather nice. And to see the Queen thing was an interesting thing to go through. So there was a, I suppose the first thing which was done was there was a sequence where they showed various iconic images and sequences where it was sort of like an introductory test, like, do you, like a quiz, do you recognise this? I can't quite remember the pictures of cats and sort of just the odd placement of props, establishment of genre that they were going to present a museum reconstruction of the time. So they were showing you individual items, so you wouldn't suddenly be thrown into a 1960s or 70s scene and suddenly say, be overwhelmed. There was this step of showing you individual props, very large. So one, two, send the prop, next prop, and there was a ramping up of props such that you could actually see the actual processes go together. And basically it's the story of Freddie Mercury. And so at the start of it, there was the seeing the device, the cognitive device of setting your framework for understanding what was going on by, it's like a cognitive lab. They show you one image and get your brain to think one thing. Then the next image, so they would, I could well imagine them having a cognitive chart that they wanted you to go through, and then how to actually sequence images where there'll be a little bit of audience participation, I think, sort of like a quiz show going through. Then we come to the unusual thing. I must admit, I knew there were four people in Queen. I knew that they got booed off stage in Australia. When they came out here, it was a non-success thing for them. They weren't successful. So it's a comment for Australia being a different incubation place compared to the United States or the UK, in terms of that there's certain things that we can really like and really promote. And so occasionally Australia is the, and very rarely the test bed to get things up. So ABBA, for instance, was sort of bobbling around as a group, but coming out to Australia, it it was taken out by Australia. So similarly, Queen, when it came out to Australia, completely flopped. And there's sort of an understanding that the theatricals and metaphors just wouldn't have actually worked in with the Australia, which was trying to, I suppose, interpret things a bit more literally and had a sort of other cultures going through. It's sort of like the rest of the world 10 years lagged. I don't know, it's hard to describe it. But what's really interesting is that it starts off with this airport handler. So you've got a plane there, someone handling bags, and this person looks at a bag for some reason. Well, I suppose there must be significance of it. And it's a period bag. It's a not your modern bag. It's a square bag, and he picks it up and throws it. I suppose what got me is I got no real sense of these luggage weighing anything. These people were tossing around like props. So it was a little bit, there's certain elements of it, which were lighting or the density of props or the positioning of things to locate things, contrived. I suppose so you had a very strong feeling that you were in places. So particularly at the end where they did Wembley Stadium, you felt, oh my God, this is a CGI job. Artfully done. However, everything had a certain density in the space and was pretty much like a computer graphic. It just didn't feel that there was any other England around it, and all the people in it were white, and you know, the casting, it just didn't have it. There was something a bit spooky about that. So there's sort of slight spooky aspects to the movie as your brain processes things. You said, look, this can't possibly be correct, and so there's, I don't know, just various, I don't know, just various things about the things that were right, like the telephones were correct periods there. There was a system where he had light switches at a distance. I don't know. Just various things which they had a picture. So there's one scene where he was Freddie Mercury's communicating with his wife, who's in a different space, by flicking on a lamp on and off, and it did have the correct sound of that era lamp clicking it on and off, that switch, I suppose. But then what was a bit different, a bit spooky, was that there's a camera angle where you could actually see direction through, I don't know, it kept, it's sort of like that, this classic Renaissance pictures of a face in a mirror, and it's a face that you could see it, and obviously the actual person wouldn't be using it, because if they can see themselves in the mirror, you wouldn't see their face. It's sort of, I don't know, there's things like that. But they had him packaging, and they had someone idly abusing him, "You packy," and story, which I didn't know, that he was Indian descent, and so this was brought in as a thing, sort of left in an earlier period, but it turned out, well, this is the information I just wouldn't, their face so iconic, the moustache so iconic, that you find it sort of hard to, so the big heavy moustache idea, which is really associated with gay men at that time, was so so in there that I didn't identify him as Indian or anything like that. But then we got the information in a sort of natural story that the actual the family was immigrants from Zanzibar in Africa, and that they were a Zoroastrian sect, and the Zoroastrian people from Pakistan were persecuted by the Muslims and sought refuge about 1,000 years ago. So I find this interesting, and so they established as an Indian community in Africa, and then one could imagine that the British Empire had taken over these areas, and one could well imagine that the way the British Empire uses, they use internal minorities to take over, administer the larger population or service the larger population, and when the larger population revolts, the sect that they've sided with is identified with the British Empire and become refugees. So these people, so he's actually from Africa coming up, and Zoroastrian. Now, Zoroastrian is interesting because Zoroastrians is a very, if not the most ancient religion, and it evolved in Persia, and there's the worship of eternal flames in Zoroastrian religion, and they are also very much persecuted religion, but they're not, there's no, it's hard to actually pick out in that it's so ancient, it doesn't have a lot of the central structures like a Vatican high priest, or I don't know whether it has a literature associated with it, but the original worship was of these flames, and there'd be these flaming sections in Persia where the petrol used to go as spring and catch fire, and these areas form the actual basis of the Zoroastrian religion and the actual geography, and the fact that there were these fires here in support of it meant that in as much as the fires were distributed over a large region, you couldn't actually wipe it out, and that the fires and stuff were not necessarily on a fertile or strategic region. There's all these factors with Zoroastrians which led to their longevity and the fact that they have a physical icon that they're looking at, all that's going through. I find it very interesting in that I knew these Iranian people, and they seemed quite well, but they had some like this equivalent to Iranian gypsies and Zoroastrians. There were two groups that they were very questioning of. So although this was just a footnote, you can imagine a whole series of things operating to come along. And so that was interesting. Then there was the interesting thing of I suppose the musicality of Freddie Mercury is just really unexplained. He's just was a groupie, and as a just turning back here, let's walk. So it happens that it's a fairly simple plot. He is not staying home. He's goes out to a gig of the Smiles, and he follows the Smiles and makes a note or a pass, or it's a very awkward pass, well, I suppose we should call it a pass, comment to his future wife, and she just lets the piece of information go that she has got her jacket at a particular place, and the girlfriend says, well, she works there, so it's a bit of a scratch in the head, which is really interesting, because that taking a clue and searching for a person is later on for Freddie to find his replacement lover. Much later on, he searches for this person in the telephone book and gets onto him in a world, obviously not on Facebook, pre-Facebook world, a pre-mobile phone world, but in this particular scene, it's not that it's awkward, but the actual positioning, the number of people, the wines, I suppose the beer that is served, there's something about it. Just didn't quite perhaps add up for me. So the axis between people. The process is that the lead singer quits as this Freddie Mercury comes along. There's a focus on dental stuff, and there's the talking of his teeth. So he's got additional incisors. So I technically don't know how you get additional incisors and what that means in terms of the shape of the mouth and whether that's absolutely all true and how that could actually happen. But he does have correct teeth, and is said that the shaping of his mouth leads to his musical range, and so they work and work up the industry. I don't know quite how they get the successful gigs and stuff like that. For me, it was very interesting because I had the obviously, as I have rehab, you sort of notice things go along. There's this physical reaction to music which I have, which is sort of a chill on the spine, and you can sort of notice it go to different places. So it went down to my knees this time. It's like, oh, as you're rehabilitating, you start to dream a bit differently and start to feel things slightly differently to the way they were before. There's this aspect. There's the sort of like the tick box of certain songs which must be covered, and certain stories which must be taken. So it's a bit like there's certain things that they were bound to do. One is cinematographic education and location of the audience, devices, sort of retelling devices, which meant that things didn't stick out as much. There's the structure like that. And there was critical things that they wanted to pull through. I think it's the US tour where he saw a handsome looking truckie and followed him into the men's toilets. Sort of like it's sort of a bit hard to get your mind around the supportive access active culture. And I remember pre the AIDS epidemic, I think reading I think it's The Joy of Gay Sex, a book which is out at the Bayleu Library, going through and reading about the baths and the sort of almost sort of oversexed life that's there. It's sort of hard to quite get your mind around what's happening and the creative aspects to it. There was the a famous farmhouse that everyone would know about in terms of. So there's this sort of like, for me, there's the basic. I know that these from passing, listening to people chatting, or people have an authoritative. They retell these things, or there are certain people who can retell these things and have an industry of retelling. This farmhouse, creative farmhouse, they set up a studio and retaped and redubbed it. It was, I suppose, a bit interesting in that the methodology of actually constructing it was with these very broad, high-quality magnetic tapes. Of course, nowadays they're all MP3 and structures like it, and the tapes were remixed with audio. You know, people listened to audio, not looking at the actual waveforms and putting them up there. Or what we would do now is Fourier analyze the waveforms, adjust the notes directly in, so things would be automatically sort of fairly clinically at the same note, so you could, it's fairly easy to just vary the note, the frequency of it and the speed with it, so you can get some fairly rubbishy stuff get on. So the technology they had seemed pretty simple and pretty hard. I find it almost hard to imagine how Bohemian Rhapsody was actually constructed at these different sections. And of course it was put together in segments and then later on played all the way through. And I sort of understood it a little bit more in terms of the discordant or Galileo Figaro sort of like, it was a bit of the opera in the background, but, and music and stuff like that, the piano, it's almost like a dreamlike association. Mama, I killed a man. And the opera, the sort of like very quick, moving into different styles, this all mixture. And, I suppose it was, to me, it was a bit like, I don't know, it was a bit like David Attenborough, thing where, David Attenborough would say, oh, it's a tough world out here, and there's things eat each other, and you have to be very intelligent to surprise. And now we look at this animal, and it's going out, oh, it's very intelligent, it's done that, and it's actually ticked off all the theory of evolution. Charles Darwin rings again. That's what you did. You can get back into your tree now. You've proved my point. So there was a bit of this instruction that I want to produce this operatic, etc., etc., etc. And operatic. So they basically followed the formula. The description of what he wanted to do then led your interpretation of it. And then there's the friction of between band members and the sort of slightly rising up of tension, so they get different rooms and sort of the bringing in and the throwing things at people, which then later put out that this is creative tension, and which is really interesting in that in your highly hierarchical creative spaces, people cannot, in say in teaching area, where you get points for agreeing with people and flagging everything through, things aren't very creative or risky, just as well. I don't think parents would appreciate anything which was going to flop, but it is interesting that the lack of planning for it to go across, and it sort of goes through in terms of the evolution of audience participation, which is sort of seen as their innovation, is seen at Rio and so at the Rio thing, he said, oh, look, I didn't know whether anyone was listening, but at the end, everyone began singing my song. And so it's what I did appreciate is that some of the thoughts were not announced as a PowerPoint, but announced in little bits and threaded through. And so at a later point, boom, boom, clap, boom, boom, clap, boom, 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 that's boom, boom, clap. It's 1, 2, 3, clap, boom, 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 clap. I can't quite, what it's a mud on your face or whatever it is. And so that was taken with the idea of Freddie being late, and that had been shown. It's a very sort of class, so it was an educational one, saying this is what it did, and so obviously with music and performance, you can bring things together, and the sort of post success thing where Freddie goes solo, and you got this rather strange process going on, and it's this. I was sort of think who the band member of INXS. Similar, there's this type of process with on all celebrities or all presidents and things where the actual image, your cultural appropriation of your image gets confused into your character. And so larger than life stage thing comes in, and who was that? One of the person who committed suicide in Melbourne, in Sydney. Oh, just trying to think. This is where the brain is going across. And of course, I'm doing this at the moment for cognitive rethink, to recall all of this and to actually overlay analysis, because one of the things that you don't get to do is you don't get to analyze these things because you're told to shut up, or what is it, or you're over analyzing it, whereas you're not definitely analyzing it, you're just raising this up as a compositional device for what's happening. So I'm just looking at, so a compositional device, when you're talking about it, doesn't have to be the dominant thing. It's something that you want to share as a concept and discuss whether this has gone through. And it's sort of like you're putting up as a list, as a dot point, putting it on the page. You may take it or put it aside, or it may have a feature later on. There's the the thing of this going solo, Michael Jackson, I suppose, the Jackson 5, etc., which I don't think is sort of overall handled in anyone's life, in terms of there's always seems to be a point at which you want to break in relationships and go separate ways. But in this case, Freddie got his lawyer to get out of the, or the agent to get out of the car immediately, and the Northern Irish gay lover sort of was a bit weaselly, saying sort of, it's really interesting to see white hunting at work, in terms of, I think everyone focuses on bullying and the fireworks, but underneath it there's this very subtle duplicity that is, you put in support, you take away support to stabilize someone, and you can actually get the actual storm to blow something around. It's like slowly, or literally, white-hatting roots and critical roots, with the knowledge that you can create a storm to get them, and they have to give ground. What is interesting is that this person is using this force to destabilize, push people away, take over Freddie Mercury, and then uses the same force again to move him against his band, and then they get the band together, and they just I must admit, what I find a bit strange is that you have these pictures of the gay bars, the village people, this particular people, but in the street, I don't ever see. Well, you might see in Oxford Street, but it's sort of like a vanishingly small section of the population are these very overt people. I must admit, I don't. I suppose people don't wouldn't point. I mean, people tend to pick these people, whereas I, and say, oh, I'm pretty sure this is that sort of person. But you see these people all traipsing around the movie, and you say, oh, well, it's definitely not like this in the cinema, and this. Yeah, I must admit, I have not seen anyone that fits that sort of description for a number of years. I've only ever seen it on the movies or something like that, which may well mean that we have this interaction between two cultures. The interesting thing is this concept of misfits and not belonging is an interesting aspect. This was put forward to some sort of speech. I think, who do you appeal for? Well, we are misfits, and we appeal to the misfits at the back of the the stage, or back of the people who feel they don't belong. And I just really lament the people who really do think that they belong at any point in time. They just seem recipes for really dangerous types of people who fit into that category. So it was a good thinking. There's I think the use of light and enclosed spaces is something which gave you sort of a general intimacy or a feel. A feel for it in terms of there was a picture of the hospital, and in which Freddie went to get his news about AIDS and all that type of stuff, and just trying to actually picture it all together in terms of the way that was structured. So it was a bit like a cathedral or a church, but inside the houses that were there was there to give a feeling of opulence, but also the actual figures were there. One of the interesting things that I'm trying to work out is that they have the in the actual film they used CGI to go back through the back of a plane or back through the back of a car into an audience. It sort of establishes sort of dreamlike thing where you have scene transitions. So your natural scene transitions of yesteryears, where the black and, you know, fade to black, fade to white. This is actual CGI transition through a window or a back area, and being able to fly through. So I don't know, it's a very sort of engaged your intellect about, you know, what are these people trying to do. Of course, I would have missed all the nuances and different things that I suppose other people would have picked up on. I suppose what one of the I don't know, I felt hit over the head a little bit in terms of the various sequences they had a target to get a thing to do, and it's a little subplot. It had to be resolved, and they hit the subplot thing. And so you had Bono saying with Live Aid, was it Bono or it's Bob Geldof? I don't know who it was. I want to get £1 million down to Africa, people are starving in Ethiopia, you have the phones. Once you have this, people heard the whatever it was. was it Queen? They began phoning in, and they reached £1 million. Which sort of nowadays seems like nothing, doesn't it? But to get in these live, super live, large audiences, and him there, in the telly room, being, the Queen has saved us. It seemed a bit, I don't know, heavy-handed. And there was the person who stood up against Bohemian Rhapsody being cloud, no room for losers, and they just had an image there. It was obviously the thing to do, but it was not high. I mean, it was obviously the thing to do, but it was not musical theatre pantomime. I just think going through, I suppose what is a bit irony is they been an immigrant from Africa, and the money going back to Africa, but that didn't go, and it was very much built on the Wembley performance. as a book stop, and so there was this sort of like sort of dream sequence at the start where he's going up, seeing all his cats, so you know that there's cats and Wembley going over, and that the story is going to resolve it. So in that way, it was well structured. I suppose what's amazing is that there is nothing close to it in compositional adventurism, what you really need is, I suppose, at the moment there's the digital. There seems at the moment it's almost hard not to mix genres because of all the digital stuff and the way that people record record and put things together. I just don't know whether we would be able to reproduce any of that again, of that form. Simply because it's become too easy for us to do it, and we've got other other things where a product has to actually be badged up to the top. It can't be actually completely innovative in terms of it's got to be identifiable, whereas the sort of down the chain, like we've become YouTube consumers, like we're in for 5 second grabs of this. The point is made very quickly, with a not a lot of we're for reading news feeds rather than a sort of a 6 minute lecture. So I really wonder whether this type of thing, the long ballad stories, can actually come through any more, and the sort of naivety and tension coming across, and whether this overall creativity can be reproduced in other sections, that is, whether the actual lack of resource, various tensions come in to create creativity rather than actual a formula, that is, that it's like cooking up a dinner, and it's you don't have all the ingredients there, you have to actually work on it, but if you can actually plan a dinner, get in all the ingredients on time and run it like a thing, for some reason it just doesn't taste as surprising when you finally get it. So that's the rerun of Bohemian Rhapsody, as I've seen it as a movie, and I suppose what you'll get from it is I don't know, someone's sitting back thinking about it, analysing it all the time, not necessarily being able to chat with your people around with you. So it's perhaps what may be interesting in this is just that anyone would watch it and sit back and analyse it and not disturbingly really get with the music and get back into the era when they first all heard the tunes. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.